Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri, and the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on privacy when we come back. Well, are you concerned about your privacy? And how much does your government know about you? And how much do you want your government to know about you? Well, government only knows as much about you as you tell them about yourself, and everything that government, industry, or business knows about you is because you told them. Now, the Fourth Amendment protects you in your person, houses, papers, and effects, but it doesn't protect you from yourself. Now, can we have privacy in the computer age? Well, you bet we can. Information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. It's knowing how much information is gathered. It's knowing what information is stored. What information do you want to keep personal and private? That's what actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, always keep in mind that no one knows anything about you that you haven't revealed by your own hand or by your own mouth. Now, if you'd like to learn more about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call and ask for my free general law CD package? That's a 4-hour program. Remember, it's entertaining, it's informative, educational. Best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call the school at area code 417-273-4967 and order yours. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, once you go to the webpage, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Privacy. Boy, privacy now in the 21st century, in fact, since about 1950, pretty much throughout my lifetime, privacy has been a rare commodity here in the United States, and I imagine probably where you live in Canada or Australia or Western Europe or South Korea or Japan or wherever you're listening, people listen all over the world, and I get a lot of emails and I get a lot of calls and feedback over this thing called privacy. We teach a class here on private business, of which portions of the class are dedicated toward privacy and privacy issues. And that's because privacy primarily has to do with business. Privacy and business go together like a horse and carriage or a hand and a glove. And that's because there's money to be made from information. Information about you produces profits for Mutual of Omaha, makes the sheriff's job much easier, and it gives the sheriff's deputies and policemen and government officials raises and promotions when they can use information to accomplish goals within their agencies, and then they get promoted, you know, from GS-11 to GS-12, and they make more money off of it. Primarily, privacy has to do with making money. And being able to crack privacy or privacy codes or people's personal private information is what makes corporations more and more money down on their bottom lines. And so when you get right down to where the rubber meets the road, your privacy is in your hands. That's what the bottom line is. And nobody knows anything about you that you haven't told them yourself. There are not secret little gremlins running around behind you with a clipboard, watching everything that you do and then writing that down and then putting that onto computer disks and then keeping that information. What they do, you go into your doctor's office. I was in my dentist's office not too long ago. And this lady in the dentist's office handed me a clipboard with some information that she wanted, and that, starts off and it says, what's your name and address and telephone number? And they want to know such things as, what are you allergic to? And they put that information down. They said, well, he's allergic to penicillin, or he's allergic to this or that or something else. And they want to know, where do you work and who's your employer and how much money do you make and do you have insurance? And if so, what insurance company do you have this insurance with, and what are its limits, and how does it pay dentists, and, you know, all this information. They want to know your social security number. You know, social security number. In short, they want to know your name, social security number, and your birth date. They always ask you for your birth date. When people ask me for my birthday, I say, are you going to send me a birthday present? And they kind of look at you like you're stupid. Of course they're not going to send you a birthday present. Well, then, will they need to know your birthday for? Think about that for a second. All of you people listening to me right now, write me a letter. My address is Post Office Box 297. That's Post Office Box 297, Isabella, Missouri. I want you to write me a letter. I want you to tell me about your birthday. What is your birthday? Right away, you're sitting there saying, why would I want to take 40 cents and send this guy a letter and tell him when my birthday is? Well, it's just my point. It's just my point. Even if you send me your birthday, I'm not going to send you a birthday card. I'm not going to send you a birthday present. I don't need the information. It's totally superfluous, but you go into your dentist, and he wants to know. When was the last time your dentist sent you a birthday card or sent you a birthday present? So why did he want to know what your birthday was? He asked you what your social security number was. Was he going to send you a social security check? Was he going to take a portion of the bill, a portion of your payments, and send it to Social Security for your old age retirement? I doubt it. In fact, not only do I doubt it, so do you. You know as well as I do that your dentist, your doctor, and all these people that ask that question, you get this piece of paper from this guy, and it asks for certain information. I want to know your name, your birth date, and your social security number, and that's your dentist, for crying out loud. He's not going to send any money to Social Security in your name so that you can draw that money out when you retire. He's not going to send you a birthday card. He's not going to send you, you know, a birthday present, but you give him that information, so why in hell wouldn't you give it to me? You're going to say, well, yeah, Gordon, you don't need to know what my birthday or my social security number is. So what does your dentist need? Your dentist can't fill a tooth unless he knows your social security number? I mean, come on, kids. It's time to grow up and get real, you know. Now, it's just a form, and I remember one time my wife broke her ankle, and we took her over to the doctor, and before we did that, though, I called the emergency room down at Mountain Home, you know, the Mercy Medical Center, and I said, hey, my wife stepped in a gopher hole over here. We're chasing down a heifer out here in the back 40, and she stepped in a gopher hole or something, fell down, broke her ankle, And I'd like to know how much that's going to cost. And this lady on the other end said, there's no way to know. No way to know. I thought, that's kind of peculiar. You know, if I called my Chevy dealer and said, hey, I'd like to buy a new Chevrolet automobile, what's it going to cost? I'll bet you he'd say, well, the sticker price is $18,377.40. Looking at one right here on the showroom floor. Why don't you come on and take a look? It's a beautiful green model. You know, if you want to know what the price of a pizza is, you know, you call Pizza Hut and you say, hey, what's the price of a king-size pizza? And they say, well, it's $14.95. I might say, well, it depends on what kind of toppings. Well, I don't know, what kind of toppings do you offer? And they'll sit there and read it right off the menu. And you can have all those toppings, or you can have three of those toppings, and you'll get three toppings, and it's $14.95, or you can get any six toppings, you know, for $16.95, and you know, I can tell you what the price of a pizza is, but you break your ankle, call the hospital and say, what's that going to cost? There was no way to know. No way to know. Now, see, I don't have any health insurance. We don't deal in insurance, and so I don't have health insurance. So if I break my ankle and need to go to the hospital, I got to know what the price is so that I know how much money to take. And, you know, unless I can call the emergency room and say, okay, broke my ankle, how much is that going to cost? Oh, it's going to cost $600. Okay, well, it gives me an idea. I should probably take $600-$800 with me so that I can pay you when you get through fixing my broken ankle. This woman down here, she says, no way to know. I said, well, listen, let me ask you this. Have you ever fixed a broken ankle down there in a hospital before? And she said, well, of course. We fix broken ankles every day. Got real defensive. Well, of course, we fix broken ankles every day. Good. Give me a run-of-the-mill price, you know, the last two or three days. You know, what about how much are those running? $600-$800? $300? $3,000? You know, give me a ballpark estimate. No way to know. She told me, no way to know. I mean, we finished the conversation. No way to know. I said, well, hell, it's hard to do business with somebody that doesn't know how much you're going to charge. What would you think if you went into Pizza Hut and said, how much for a king-size pizza? No way to know. You just come in, sign a blank check, and we'll fill in the amount. I mean, my God, boys and girls, we don't buy pizza that way. Why would we buy medical services that way? Well, I know we do, but I'm just asking you the question. You know, what in the world's going on here? So I thought, well, maybe that's a hard outfit to do business with. So I got to the Yellow Pages, and I got to looking through the Yellow Pages, and there was a clinic over in West Plains, over in Howell County, called the clinic. And I said, hey, my wife stepped in a gopher hole out there, and she chasing a heifer down and twisting her ankle, and we think it's broke. We don't know that positively, but probably need a couple x-rays, you know, and if it's broke, probably need a cast, and, you know. What do you think that's going to cost? And she said $235. And I knew immediately there's something wrong there. And I said, well, wait a minute. That can't be right. $235. I mean, you just told me the answer right off the top of your head. You can't do that. You can't know how much a broken ankle is going to cost. Does that include the x-rays? Oh, yeah. Yep. It includes the x-rays. Well, wait a minute. Does that include the cast? Sure. Who's going to take the cast off? Oh, we do. Yeah, you come back in, we take the cast off. You mean you're going to take the x-rays, you're going to put on the cast, you're going to take off the cast, and you're going to do all of that for $235? Yeah. And you know how much that's going to cost before we even come into the office? Yeah. $235. I said, Jesus. Now, there's a business person, you know, that girl knew what she was talking about. So I bundled the wife up, you know, in the old blue machine and took her over to, and she, by the time we got over there, you know, about an hour or two, you know, by now, you know, her ankle's all swollen up and she can't walk very good. And so I went inside and I said, hey, I'm that guy called you about that $235 special you're having on broken ankles. And she said, oh, yes, Mr. Gordon. And she grabbed a wheelchair and wheeled it out there to the old blue machine. My wife got in the wheelchair and they wheeled her away and took her in behind the closed doors into the inner sanctum, you know, of the clinic. And I went over and sat down, started reading Time magazine, and this young girl came over, you know, she's probably 20, 25 years old, something like that, some kid. You know, a kid to me. She probably thought she was an adult. And she handed me a clipboard with a piece of paper on it. And then she said, well, would you fill this out, Mr. Gordon? And I said, well, certainly. I smiled brightly, and I said, certainly. And I took a look at this piece of paper, and I looked on the other side, and it was asking questions. It was kind of like a little questionnaire. 8.5 by 11 paper, both sides, and, you know, not real small print, but, you know, fairly fine print for old folks. And I started filling this out, and wanted to know name, address, telephone number, social security number, where do you work, do you have insurance, and, you know, standard questions, just normal run-of-the-mill, everyday garden variety information. So I started filling it all out, you know, giving them standard, everyday, ordinary garden variety information. Said, what's your name? So I looked at that, and I said, well, you know, on the telephone, I told them my name was George Gordon. It's no real big secret, and I come on the radio and I say, well, I'm George Gordon. I'm your host, George Gordon. So I keep telling you people, you know, who I am. So that's pretty public information. I don't hide my name from people very often. And then they wonder, what's your social security number? Well, I don't have a social security number. And so I thought, well, you know, she wants to know what my social security number is, and so I guess I ought to tell her. So I wrote N-O-N-E, none, in that blank. There's a blank spot there. N-O-N-E. Wanted to know where I worked. Well, I'm retired. So I don't have a job. I'm a deadbeat. I'm unemployed. I'm retired. I don't have any gainful employment. So I put that down, retired, and I went through the entire form, both sides. It took me about, I don't know, 15 minutes. And when I got all through, I passed my paper in, just like I did to Mrs. Wilds in the third grade. You know, you get through with your paper, you bring it up and put it on the teacher's desk. And I got up and I put it on the teacher's desk, went back, sat down to read my Time magazine. And the young girl came over, and I could see on her face that she was clearly distressed. And she says, "Oh, Mr. Gordon, this form isn't filled out correctly." Offended me. Yeah, it offended me. And the reason I felt like I was offended is because I'm an old man and I take great pride in filling out forms. And I take great pride in the answers that I give. And that's because I know how to fill out forms. And I said, "Could you point to one error in any of my answers on that form?" And she said, she shot right back. She said, "Well, Mr. Gordon, you don't have your social security number on here. And you don't have your wife's social security number on here." Now, my wife doesn't have a social security number either. And I wrote N-O-N-E for me, and I wrote N-O-N-E for her. I mean, I wrote none on there twice, on both blanks, none. And this young girl comes over there, and I thought to myself, now how in the hell does this girl know that that answer is incorrect? I mean, how does she know what my social security number is? I was getting real curious, kind of like Dorothy. I was getting curiouser and curiouser. And I said, now on that blank, it says N-O-N-E. Hell, without even looking at the paper, I could remember 5, 10, 15 minutes ago when I wrote that N-O-N-E down there on Social Security. And I said, "It says N-O-N-E." And she said, "Yes." And I said, "Well, that's the correct answer." And she said, "But we can't enter this into our computer without your Social Security number." And I said, "Okay. Now, have I got all my answers straight here?" She said, "You didn't fill this out correctly." And I said, "Point to an error." She said, "You don't have your social security number on here." And I said, N-O-N-E. And she said, "We can't enter that into our computer without your social security number." And I said, "Okay. So what's the problem so far?" I don't care if she can enter that into her computer or not. It's not my problem in life. I'm not having any computer difficulties. I'm not getting paid for filling out information for her to put into her computer. I don't have a social security number, and I don't really feel too much like going down and getting one just so that you can fill out this form and stick it in your computer. So she said to me, "It's the law." And I said, "Well, okay, you caught me. I'm guilty as hell. I don't have a social security number. So when you put on the handcuffs, put them on light, because I'm an old man. Don't hurt my wrists." And she said to me, well, I'm going to have to tell Dr., I forgot his name now, Dr. Riley or whatever his name was. I said, "Okay." Okay. It's okay with me if you report me to Dr. Riley. "Dr. Riley, do you know that Mr. Gordon out there doesn't have a social security number?" It's okay by me. I mean, you can go tell President Bush if you want to. Now you all know George Gordon and Jacqueline Gordon do not have social security numbers. Why don't you call your local sheriff, chief of police, the Social Security Administration, and President Bush, write them a letter and say, "George Gordon confessed on the radio publicly to millions of people around the world he doesn't have a social security number. Isn't that against the law? Shouldn't he be arrested like Rush Limbaugh? Shouldn't he be put in prison? Shouldn't there be a law that requires him to get a social security number?" I don't know. I suppose there should be. Call Dianne Feinstein. Call Barbara Boxer. They need new laws. They need new subject matters. I mean, you know, they haven't got anything better to do, so they want to regulate guns. Why don't you call them up and tell them, hey, that guy Gordon didn't have a Social Security number. Go get him. Well, anyway, she came back from the doctor, and when they got to chit-chatting about it, I guess he kind of figured out, well, okay, get the rest of the information. While she went on, she asked questions like, well, what's your birth date? She came back, she said, what's your birth date? Now, in that line over there, I put down Fourth Amendment objection. Fourth Amendment objector. It's either that or I put religious objector, and I'll forget which. It comes under both First and Fourth Amendment objection. And so I don't tell people what my birthday is. Have you noticed that? I mean, you can go back through my archives. And there's archives on there. There's 2,000 programs archived here on my website. And I don't think that a single time in any of those programs I have ever revealed to you people out there what my birthday is. That's pretty personal. That's pretty private. I don't tell people that. And I didn't tell this girl that. I didn't tell this Dr. Riley or whatever his name was. I didn't tell him that either. I put in there, object. I object to you even asking what my birthday is. But she was kind of a rude young girl. She asked me point blank. She said, well, what is your birth date and what is your wife's birth date? And I said, well, that's really none of your business, young lady. I asked her a question first. I said, if I tell you what my birthday is, are you going to send me a birthday card? And she said, no. I mean, I asked her plainly. I said, are you going to send me a birthday card? She said, no. I said, well, I'm not going to tell you what my birthday is. It's none of your business. And she was offended. She was offended. When I said, it's none of your business, it was like I slapped her across the face with a dead, wet, slimy fish. Shocked was the expression on her face. You know, if I came up to you and I said, did you have sex with your wife last night? What would you say to that? Well, would you tell me, well, yeah, I did, as a matter of fact. And well, let me ask you this. How was it? Good or bad? Did you both reach climax at the same time? Or? Well, wouldn't you think that that was kind of damn forward of me? Wouldn't you think that's none of my damn business? Wouldn't you think, how rude of you? Well, how come you don't think the same thing about people that ask you what your Social Security number is and what your birthday is? Hey, my birthday, you know, I was naked that day. What are you going to do? Ask me, well, how were you dressed when you came out, Gordon? I was dressed in my birthday suit. And I was damn embarrassed about the whole event. There was all these people looking at me. And I really didn't care too much for it. Well, listen, you know, there's some things in life, if you stop and think about it, are actually nobody else's business. I always call it the Denny's waitress test. The Denny's waitress test. For some reason, when we go into a doctor's office and they ask us, what's your Social Security number, your birth date, where do you work, what kind of insurance do you have, we give them that information. But if you walked into Denny's restaurant, you sit down for lunch, the waitress comes over, she hands you a clipboard, and she says, here, fill this out. You look at her like, huh? Where's the menu? And she says, well, you don't get a menu until you fill out this questionnaire. On the questionnaire, it says, what's your name, address, telephone number? Where do you work? Do you have health insurance? What's your Social Security number? What's your birth date? Are you allergic to penicillin? And do you have hemorrhoids? I mean, there's a question. When you go into a doctor's office, there's 27 boxes to fill out. And one of them is, do you have hemorrhoids? Boys and girls, do you know what hemorrhoids are? Do you know where hemorrhoids are located? I would contend with you that hemorrhoids are kind of personal, wouldn't you? How many little bumps do you have on your anus? I say that's kind of personal. Bumps on my butt, boys and girls, are none of your business. And I ain't telling. But I don't know, for some reason, you walk into a doctor's office, and they think they ought to know how many bumps you have on your butt. Now, if I walked into Denny's restaurant and that girl said, well, I want to know how many bumps you got on your butt before I give you a menu, I'd get the hell out of there, wouldn't you? Well, excuse me, boys and girls, what the hell makes this sweet young thing over in the doctor's office any different than the sweet young thing down at Denny's? Who the hell are these sweet young things asking you personal questions like, what's your social security number? Were they going to send you a social security check? Were they going to send you a birthday card? Were they going to pay half your health insurance premium? I want to know if you got insurance or not. So, you know, in my lifetime, I've come to the conclusion that not everything that everybody asks me is necessary or imperative for the business at hand. When I go into Denny's restaurant, really isn't necessary for this girl to know when my birthday occurred. Fast tense. I only had one. Many people like to celebrate the anniversary of their birth. They call those birthdays, but the truth of the matter is you only have one birthday, and then you have anniversaries, but I don't call them anniversary. I don't call them birthday anniversaries. I call them, well, how many birthdays have you had? Well, 53. I've had 53 birthdays. No, you haven't. You had one birthday and 52 anniversaries. But for some reason in our society, we don't think that it's peculiar when people ask us these personal questions. And I just give you a couple of personal ones, like hemorrhoids, social security, and birthdays. I think those are kind of personal. They want to know how many children you have. Well, you know, it's no big secret how many children I have. Except for all of you people out there, I don't think I want to tell you. I don't think that it's germane or you need to know. Now, my wife's got a broken ankle. Can you tell me what it is about a broken ankle that the doctor needs to know how many children she's had? I could see if she had uterine cancer, the doctor might want to know how many children she had. It might be germane to cancer treatment as to how many children, how many babies a woman had had. But, you know, if I had prostate cancer and I went to the doctor, so how many children do you have? Excuse me, doc, but can you tell me how that's going to help you with your treatment of my prostate cancer if you knew how many children I'd fathered? I think it would be more germane if he asked me, are you circumcised? I mean, you know, there could be some things. Are you allergic to penicillin? Yeah, there's some things that the doctor probably would need to know. But if I ask the doctor, are you planning to give me some penicillin? No, I'm not planning to give you any penicillin. Well, then what in the hell do you need to know whether or not I'm allergic to it or not? You know, people in our society are used to giving this kind of information out to total strangers. I mean, hell, you get a form, you know, this guy comes over, he wants to sell you health insurance, life insurance, accident insurance. He comes over and they hand you these forms. This is an insurance company. And they hand you a form and they ask you, what's your social security number? Excuse me, but my social security number. I might as well say, well, what's your marriage license number? What's your driver's license number? What's your business license number? What in the hell does my business license, driver's license, or marriage license have to do with buying health insurance? But they want to know what your social security number is. What's that got to do with the price of putty? They want to know what your birthday is. They want to know what your name is. Now, I can see giving them your name. They want to identify you. And they want to put you in alphabetical order here in a file cabinet someplace. A name is pretty important because if they want to reference your account, your insurance account with the insurance company, and you tell them my name is Sylvester Stallone, they look under S to find it. If you tell them my name is George Gordon, they look under G to find it. You know, if you walked in and you said, well, I ain't telling you what my name is, and then you walk in and say, I'd like to file a claim, and they say, well, what's the name? You say, well, I don't have one. I'm under anonymous, and they say, well, oh, my God, you know, we have 13 million customers, 13 million policies out here. We have to have some way to look that up. You know, we want to know if your premiums are current and what the policy limits are. I can see that a name could be pretty important. And I gave her my name. I said, my name is George Gordon. But I don't really see the point now in some of the information that's on this questionnaire. And a couple of times she went back and she's talking to the doctor. See, she'd go back, she'd say to the doctor, hey, listen, this guy Gordon over here is being hard. He doesn't tell me his birthday. He doesn't tell me his social security number. And there's probably 50 questions on this form. I think I answered one. What's your name? I think I told. Now, I filled in every blank. I told them the answer. They wanted to know what my address was, and I put Fourth Amendment objection. And they wanted to know what my birth date was, and I think I put Fourth Amendment objection or First Amendment objection. They wanted to know what my Social Security number was, so I put down none, N-O-N-E. I mean, I didn't lie to anybody. I told them the truth, and I gave them all the information that I figured they probably needed. They wanted to know if I had insurance, and I said, no, I don't. I don't have any insurance. And she came out, and she said to me, out of one of her trips, she said, how are you going to pay for today's services? And I said, with gold. And she said to me, I don't think we take gold. I could have told her, well, of course you don't take gold. You people here in this doctor's office don't know what the hell money is. You people have never dealt in money. You don't deal in money. And you're not very likely to deal in money here today. But, you know, you asked me plainly, how are you going to pay for today's services? And I told you plainly, with gold. If you didn't want to know, why did you ask? She asked. I told her. She went back and talked to the doctor again. He couldn't contain himself, so he had to come out and meet me. He said, I just can't believe that we've got an animal like you out in our waiting room, and I had to come out and meet you. And she said, well, how are you going to take care of today's services? How are you going to take care of today's service? That's what the real bottom line is. They want to know how they're going to get paid. They want your insurance number and Social Security. They want you to identify yourself so they can write you letters and dun you in one thing and another. Hell, if I'm going to pay you cash today, and here's the other side of the coin. Now, I told them I was going to pay them in gold. They came out and said, well, we don't take gold, but we'll take MasterCard, Visa, Bank AmeriCard, you know, MasterCard, you know, Discover. In fact, they said, we'll even take your personal check. We'll even take your personal check. Now, excuse me, I'm not the brightest guy in the world. I'm not the sharpest marble in the drawer. But honest to God, boys and girls, if you had somebody in your office, you don't know his name, you don't know his address, he doesn't have Social Security number, he's really a weirdo, off the wall, won't tell you his birthday, fills out this application for credit, and he says no, none, never, and answers Fourth Amendment, First Amendment, and kiss off. And then he says, how are you going to, he asks him, how are you going to pay for today's services? He says, with gold. Would you take a check from a jerk like that? Would you take his check? Honest to God, I wonder where sanity has gone in this country, you know? It sure as hell ain't in the doctor's office. So anyway, they got down on the bottom line, and we negotiated a settlement. They agreed that they would take worthless Federal Reserve notes, 235 worthless fiat currency Federal Reserve notes issued by a private bank of the United States of America, Incorporated. They'd take those worthless paper. They wouldn't take gold, but they would take my check. They would take my credit card. She asked me if I had a credit card, and I said no. She said, she was kind of surprised. She said, well, why don't you have a credit card? And I said, because I don't have any credit. And she was shocked, and she said, well, why don't you have any credit? And I said, because I'm a deadbeat. And she said, well, I got to go back and report you to the doctor. And she did. She went back there three or four times and reported me to the doctor. This guy doesn't have a Social Security number, he doesn't have a birth date, he's a deadbeat, he doesn't have any credit cards, but we'll take your check, Mr. Gordon. Honest to God. If that isn't insane, I don't know what is. So before we go any further here on this privacy thing over here, hang on. Let me give you a reminder that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the webpage, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School Direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, remember our website, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Hey, one of my students sent me a real neat little story here about this thing of identification and the National Identification Card. Now, Congress has been kind of hinting around at this National ID Card. Most people in the world, you know, if you live in Russia, you have a state-issued national identification card. I would imagine the Chinese probably have the same thing. I don't know that positively, but I would find it hard to believe that they haven't advanced that far in their civilization, that they've got everybody named and numbered and registered, you know, as chattel property of the state. We haven't done that here in the United States, at least not in a formal way. I mean, everybody here in this country has been named and numbered. We have social security numbers and driver's license numbers and business license numbers. I mean, everybody in the country is named and numbered and registered with the government in some way or another. Well, virtually everybody. I mean, there might be two or three Amish screwballs out there that they haven't gotten numbered. But for practical purposes, they got everybody in the country, but we haven't formalized it. You know, like Tony Blair the other day says, we got to have a national ID card here in Britain, so all you Britons over there about to be identified like cows with a tag in your ear. Americans have traditionally rejected that notion or that concept, but they're bouncing it around in Congress, and they have been over the last 20 or 25 years. I've been talking about it and talking about it. So far, the anti-ID card people have resisted it, but one of these days we're going to get it. I mean, you know, just face reality, boys and girls. One of these days, they're going to come up with this national ID card, and they don't compel you to get it. It's just that if you don't have it, you won't be able to get a driver's license. And if you don't have it, you won't be able to get a credit card, or you won't be able to open a bank account, or you won't be able to get into the courthouse. And so most people want to do all these things. And so when the government comes along and says, well, if you don't do this, well, then you can't have all these benefits. And so people, you know, they get grumpy and they complain a lot, but they go down and do it. They get in line and they do it. I've often wondered, you know, what would happen if Americans got some spine in their backs for a change and just said, hell no, I won't go, and let them go to hell. You know, it's if everybody in America, you know, you want to go in and open a bank account, they say, you got to have a social security number to open a bank account. Well, okay. Well, then I won't open an account. I bet the banks would change their policy in a heartbeat if nobody would open a bank account in America. I just bet you that if you filled out your insurance application and it said, what's your social security number, and you put Fourth Amendment objection, and they said, well, we won't sell you an insurance policy unless you put in your social security number, and you said, okay, well, we'll do without the insurance then, and if everybody in the country did that, I'll bet you the insurance companies would change their policy overnight. Hell, they'd change their policy before the end of the day. I guarantee it. But what they do is they say, well, we won't sell you the insurance policy unless you give us a social security number. So most people, if they didn't have one, would rush down. Where do I get one? I want this insurance policy. I can't wait. I'll do whatever you want me to. Okay. That's why I say Americans haven't got enough spine left in them today to say no, for crying out loud. Used to be, you know, if somebody asked you a question like that, you know, you'd tell them, hell no, it's none of your damn business. You want to sell it to me or not? Oh, we're sorry that we offended you, sir. Well, you ought to be. And we learn that in public school. See, they start you off in this by institutionalizing you is what they do. See, your parents institutionalize you in a hospital the day you're born. You were institutionalized. It's because your parents have always been institutionalized. And so then the next thing is your parents who are inmates in an institution and have been institutionalized all their lives, you know, they don't see any reason why their children shouldn't be institutionalized, so they register you for public school. And so from the time you were in preschool, for crying out loud, it isn't first grade anymore, hell, it's preschool. They start you off about 3-4 years old, and they institutionalize you, and you've been institutionalized until you graduate from high school. Well, hell, now institutions are the only thing that you know. Americans have been institutionalized for their entire lives, and they get to be 18, and then they have to make a choice. The only choice that they can make is more institutionalization, so they go to college. So they're institutionalized for another 4 to 6 years, and now they're 22 years old. They've been institutionalized for 22 years. And so now they join the Army or the Air Force, or they get a job with government, or they become school teachers, and now they become institutionalized for the rest of their lives. Americans, boys and girls, are institutionalized from birth to death. It's the only thing they know. Well, people who are institutionalized, inmates of institutions, have to be orderly, and they have to be identified. Inmates in a prison have to have a number. Inmates in a hospital have to have identification bracelets. Inmates in school have to have identification methodologies attached to them. Can anything be plainer? Now, for the 5 or 6 of us out here that have escaped the institution. I mean, I was institutionalized like everybody else, but one day when I was sitting in the institution, I said, gee, I wonder what it would be like to be free. And I dreamed, you know, of freedom. I dreamed of a time when little Georgie Gordon would live his life outside of the institution, outside of the direct supervision of masters and teachers and guards. And one day I was running a corporation out in Boise, Idaho. I was institutionalized in a corporation, and I dreamed. I said, gosh, what would it be like if I closed this corporation and I didn't get a job working, you know, for the utility company or for General Motors? I mean, I won't have a job. And I won't have a business or a business license, and I'll just have a private business, and I'll make my living by sifting sand through my toes on the beach and I won't have any guardians, and I won't have any numbers. I won't have a social security number, and I'll be free. I'll be out of the institution. I dreamed of that. Somebody said, well, how are you going to live? I don't know. I didn't have a clue. I'd never lived my life before outside of an institution. I mean, I was born in an institution. I was educated in an institution. And I went to work in an institution. I worked for International Harvester. I was in the machinists' institution. A union is an institution. A corporation is an institution. School is an institution. Prison is an institution. Government is an institution. Americans have been institutionalized. And I looked back and I said, God, there was a time in America when people weren't institutionalized. How did they live? Before everybody was institutionalized, how was life in America? Or Canada, or Australia, or New Zealand, or England, or France, or Germany, or Russia. Was there ever a time in the world when people lived their lives without being institutionalized? And come to find out, yeah, there was. There was a time before public school. There was a time before corporations. There was a time before all-pervasive interventionist big government. You know, there was a time, you know, when people actually lived their lives outside of institutions. And I thought, well, let me try that. And so I did, and I'm doing that today. I don't have a social security number. I don't have any insurance, and I'm living my life outside of the institution. People want to know, how do you live without a social security number? And the answer is very well, thank you. And I want to know, well, how do you make income? I don't. And I've been living my life without income now for about 30 years. Well, I started in 78. I had income up until 1978, and then I woke up one day and I said, well, what would life be like without income? So I retired from the business world, and I've been living my life ever since without any income. I avoid income like AIDS, herpes, and VD. So far, I've been able to avoid AIDS, herpes, and VD, and since 1978, I've been able to avoid income. And by avoiding income, I can avoid the income tax. I mean, it makes all the sense in the world if you stop and think about it. People without income don't owe an income tax. And I wanted to live my life without income because I had been filling out these income tax returns all of my life. It's the only thing I knew. I'd been institutionalized in the income tax system all my life, and I didn't know how to live without income. And I thought, gosh, I wonder if I could learn. So I started off in 1978. I was about, you know, I was pushing 40, wasn't quite 40, but almost. And I tested it, and sure enough, there's life outside of the income tax institution. Did you know that? I've been asked a time or two, how do you live without income? And the answer is very well, thank you. I live very well. Very, very well. In fact, God gave me a little piece of information. It's in Isaiah. Chapter 58, Isaiah 58. Shucks. I'll even look it up for you. And he said, I'll make you to ride upon the high places of the earth, Gordon, if you give up that income and get the hell out of those institutions and practice my law, hello. And I'll make you to ride upon the high places of the earth. Let's see if I can find it here. Isaiah chapter 58. I think it's verse 14. I'm not 100% certain. But oh, yeah, here it is. Verse 13, he says, if you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your own pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, and holy to the eternal, honorable, and if you honor him, not doing your own ways, or finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words, then shall you delight yourself in the eternal, and I will cause you to ride upon the high places of the earth, and feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father, for the mouth of the eternal has spoken it. Now, most people don't practice the Sabbath. They go to church. People in this country are pretty religious. 65% of us go to church every Sunday. Boy, I'm telling you, Americans are a religious bunch. They go to church every Sunday. They don't practice the Sabbath. They're Sunday keepers. They're sun worshipers is what they are. Which, you know, it's pretty normal. It makes all the sense in the world. Our people have been sun worshipers since we left Mount Sinai in Arabia. Yeah, that's right. Mount Sinai is over in Arabia. I thought I'd shock you there. Most people think Mount Sinai is out in the Sinai Peninsula. And for religious purposes, that's true, and I don't deny that. You know, Mount Sinai is out in the Egyptian Sinai Peninsula. The Mount Sinai of the Bible, you know, where Moses went up on the mountain, that's over in Arabia on the other side of the Gulf of Aqaba. Our people didn't go through the Red Sea. Everybody's been trying to figure out, well, where did they cross the Red Sea? They didn't! Moses never set foot in the Red Sea. Well, unless he was swimming or something, you know. They didn't walk through the Red Sea. They walked across the Gulf of Aqaba from Sinai to Arabia. That's just a little aside over there. But anyway, clear back in those days, you know, when you get way back over there to Mount Sinai, those people actually practiced the Sabbath. And, of course, since then we haven't. We're sun worshipers. We've been practicing sun worship ever since. And, well, except for a couple of three short stints, you know, under David and Solomon and a couple other kings. We've been sun worshipers, and from that point on, I looked at that and I said, gee, I wonder if I could bust into the club over here and be fed with the heritage of my father Jacob. And if you're institutionalized, the answer is no, you can't. But if you can get outside the institution, you might. That's a wild new concept. Listen to this. I got to read this whole story over here. One of my students sent this to me. It says, operator, now this is you. You're going to call Pizza Hut, see? This is coming to a city near you very shortly. So get used to this. You call Pizza Hut, see? And you want to order a pizza. And you start off. The operator says, thank you for calling Pizza Hut. May I have your order, please? And you, the customer, you say, hi, I'd like to order, and the operator breaks in and she says, may I have your NIDN first, sir? Oh, yes, you respond. My national identification number. Yeah, hold on. It's 610-204-9998-45-54610. The operator responds. She says, thank you, Mr. Sheehan. I see that you live at 1742 Meadowland Drive, and your phone number is 494-2366. Your office number at Lincoln Insurance Company is 745-2302, and your cell number is 266-2566, and that you're calling from your home number. You respond, Whoa, wait a minute. Where did you get all this information? Operator, well, we're connected to the system, sir. So you respond, oh, yes, of course. Well, I'd like to order a couple of all-meat special pizzas. The operator responds, I don't think that's a good idea, sir. You respond to the operator, well, what do you mean that's not a good idea? The operator says, well, sir, your medical records indicate that you've got a very high blood pressure problem and extremely high cholesterol. And your national health care provider will not allow such an unhealthy choice. You respond, damn! So what do you recommend then? The operator says, well, you might try our low-fat soybean yogurt pizza. I'm sure you'll love it. You say, well, what makes you think I'd like something like a low-fat soybean yogurt pizza? And the operator says, well, you checked out gourmet soybean recipes from your local library last week, sir. That's why I made the suggestion. So you say, well, all right, give me two family-sized low-fat soybean yogurt pizzas. So what's the damage? Operator responds, well, that should be plenty for you, your wife, and your four children, sir. The damage, as you put it, comes to $49.99. Customer, well, let me give you my credit card number. And the operator says, well, I'm terribly sorry, sir, but I'm afraid that I can't take your credit card. You're going to have to pay cash. You see, sir, Your credit card balance is over the limit, and your card is temporarily out of service. So you respond, well, I'll run over to the ATM machine and get some cash before your driver gets here. The operator responds, well, that won't work either, sir. You see, your checking account has been overdrawn. So you respond, well, never mind, just send the pizzas. I'll have the cash ready. How long is it going to take? And the operator responds from Pizza Hut, well, we're running a little behind, sir. It'll be about 45 minutes. But if you're in a hurry, you might want to pick them up personally while you're getting the cash. But carrying pizzas on a motorcycle can be a little awkward, sir. So you respond, well, how in the hell do you know I'm riding a motorcycle? And the operator says, well, it says right here, sir, that you're in arrears on your car payment, so your car has been repossessed. But your Harley Davidson's paid up, so I'm assuming that you're going to be picking it up on your motorcycle. Customer. Blank, 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 blank. The operator reminds you, I'd advise, sir, watching your language, you've already got a July 2006 conviction for cussing out a cop, you know. By now, you are speechless. And the operator says, will there be anything else, sir? And you respond, no. No. Oh, yeah. Don't forget the 2 free liters of Coke that your ad says I get with the pizzas. And the operator says, oh, I'm terribly sorry, sir, but our ad's exclusionary clause prevents us from offering free sodas to diabetics. Now, boys and girls, you talk about being intrusive. When you get your national identification card, that is not only not unreasonable or unheard of, that will become the norm. Hell, I told you at the beginning of this program, I can, for $1,600, boys and girls, I can get the computer program that has all of that information and more on it. Wait until you get your national identification card, courtesy of Barbara Boxer and Hillary Clinton and George Bush and company. And the local girl working at the Pizza Hut will have that information online right in front of her eyeballs. And yes, she can tell that your car has been repossessed, that your bank account's overdrawn, and that you have diabetes. Now, I don't know if that's going to foreclose buying or receiving your 2 liters of free Coke just because you've got diabetes. You know, they may sell them to you anyway. Probably will, but I'm just pointing out she's going to know that you've got diabetes by simply looking on your record from your national identification card. But it shouldn't be a problem to you, boys and girls. You have been institutionalized all of your lives. So what the hell is a little more institutionalization, eh? Hey, we're about out of time. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night talking about this thing called privacy. And we'll get down to the nitty-gritty as we progress along. How would you like to be more private, and how would you like to get out of the institution? But in the meantime, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet, and the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. And if you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. The website, georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.